myself tonight.
Check, please. We'll talk about everything. We'll talk about... Jimmy.
Baseball.
Who's on the t-shirt? Courtney and me. Courtney Johnson. Well, we'll just start out with a couple of fiddle tunes. That's where it all started for me, and that's where a lot of our kind, when I say our kind of music, acoustic, bluegrass, newgrass, you name it, starts out with fiddle tom. It's fiddle style music for me. Can we try putting this in there a little, in the mantra one day? It won't help, but, you know. Won't help the playing. You've been walking around for hours with your hands down and they're all full of blood. Shake them down. I want to learn from some Texas fiddlers, different Texas fiddlers, like Major Franklin and Benny Thomason. Fork a deer. Thank you. So has it been just a wonderful thing under the tent this weekend? Yeah, it's always good to be a guy with a mandolin following heavily vocals. Thanks. Yes, sir, do you have a question?
Yeah, I want to understand, if you still practice,
is this the kind of thing you do, or do you run scales, or what do you do when you practice? Yes, I still practice, practicing, it's an interesting thing, because I've heard it said that, 10 minutes of concentrated practice is a lot better than 2 hours of not paying attention practice. But I find I do a lot of practicing watching baseball. Especially if Tim McCarver's announcing. The sound goes off immediately. But I tell you, it's crazy, because you can. But actually, what I find with practicing, yes, I mean, I still tend to do the same kind of. And really, with practice, it's about muscle coordination and finger coordination. And it's like when I first started playing, just to do scales. To get your pick moving, and it's something that becomes automatic, but obviously when you're first starting to play, it's like a challenge to get your upstrokes as loud as your downstrokes and to make them the same volume. And so I find, for me, scales were the way to get to that. And of course, it kind of starts out more as a right-hand thing. It's all within the major scale. But of course, then you go, okay, what more can I do with that? Well, then you find that you don't try to do, or maybe you try doing scales without any open strings. Because one thing that all my life I've always had to keep in mind, oh yeah, don't forget to use your little finger. Especially when playing, if you're playing in a bluegrass band, and say you had a loud banjo player. Let's say the banjo happens to be a louder instrument than the mandolin. But anyway, I found that, I would find myself going instead of just as a matter of punching over a band. But one of the things then is, we're taking the scale of D, for instance. Okay, the first thing you can do is go up into what I would think of as a bluegrass position chord. There's only two positions, that and that. That's what Bill Monroe did. It must be right. What does it say? It don't matter who's in Texas. Bill Monroe is still the king. So you might try, instead of just open strings, do it out of this chord position. It will force you to use your little finger. Same notes, different position. And then there's even another one where you can start way up in the Tex Logan fiddle position. And that's obviously. But if you learn your scales in different parts of the neck, it'll give you another place to go to when you're, because all this stuff relates to the way you play fiddle tunes or the way you can play a solo on a song, which is the same as. And then once you learn those scales, now you can go to your high strings on your first and second string. So, really, that's one thing that I would do when practicing, and another thing that it's not one thing. That's why it's called practice. You're not trying to play a concert for people or impress people with your so-called hot licks. But I mean, it's like one of the things you can do is, you know, try pulling off. And by pull-offs, I mean, so when you do that, your goal is to make the second note, the pull-off, as loud as the first one. And really, that's a great callus builder. I mean, if you do enough pull-offs and you just sit and do those for a half hour, you can start seeing little pieces of skin fly off. And then it really gets nice. Oh, yes. The burn will occur. You have to have enough callus to make that sound if you pull off. So, and ironically, the guy I first ever saw do that was Buck Owens on the Telecaster. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be mandolin where you get your inspiration from, but you can learn from other stringed instruments. But yeah, I saw Buck Owens do a thing called a polka on the guitar or something. Of course, he could do it with a smile on his face, wearing a spangly suit and a silver lamé Telecaster.
Yeah, would you play brilliancy?
Sure, I could. Yes.
Yes. Where were you when you realized that mandolin and bluegrass, beat and the offbeat, was the same as reggae music?
Mentally or geographically? Kentucky. Well, I mean, we talk about the backbeat of reggae. I mean, it was when I first heard Bob Marley and the Wailers. That was the reggae band I still and still enjoy the most. And but it was like if the beat was 1, 2, 3, 4. And to me, that sounded so much like. Like that was how I related to reggae because I went, wow, it's like they got Bill Monroe playing rhythm for me. I don't expect everyone to share that same thought. But and then later I noticed, you know, that the bass did a whole different thing in reggae, the drums do a totally different thing, but it was the rhythm guitar of Bob Marley. And he was the rhythm player that made that great sound. So we'll talk about chopping here. But the request was for brilliancy, and since how that is one of the ones I know. Thank you.
Brothers.
Dude got Russian Red.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, still do that.
Boy, you want all the hard ones. I'm sorry? Crazy Train? Who said that? All right, who said that? Everybody's pointing at somebody else back there. Well, since you asked for Freebird. I will let you know, I can't hear the song request for Freebird without, I'll have to tell you that a couple of years ago we were on a plane from Nashville to Denver, and in the early morning in the wintertime there's always there's always about six or seven good old boys that are just schnocked right off the bat, knee walking drunk at 8 a.m. because they're going to Denver to go skiing, man. Yeah, they all drunked up on the plane, and I happened to be walking by. The plane hit a little turbulence, and I kind of fell over on this one guy and kind of brushed his shoulders, said, "Excuse me." And one of the other guys traveled with us heard him say, "Hey, man, Freebird just hit me in the head, man." I had longer hair. I will just do a little bit of this for you. Ever had. Having is a misery, a hand is a misery, a better life. gotta put on your sailing shoes.
Since I was a little kid. It's true. We just happen to be little kids at the same time. First time I ever went to a bluegrass festival was at Bean Blossom, Indiana. Sam was with the New Grass Revival. That was in his long hair, beard, and staff period. I thought you were Moses. You were the coolest Moses I've ever seen.
I think you were looking at Butch Robbins, aren't
you? No.
Right?
This is all right.
Well, we're glad you're here. Here, hang on.
People in spaceships, I go, what?
Likewise. Yes, I remember meeting Marty. I think you were walking around with Carl Jackson when I would have met you. And I just remember I was standing there playing, and Marty said to Carl, "Hey, Carl, come listen to this boy play." Boy?
Did you tell him?
I must be at least 2 years old.
It's pretty famous, but did you tell him what Bill Monroe told you? Bill Monroe was actually a very wise man when it came to the box office, you know. And when the old world of bluegrass was trying to find, it kind of merged with the Woodstock generation, and all of a sudden there was mom and pop over here and the cool people over here. And he knew that Sam and those guys were doing something different, but he couldn't quite figure out what they were up to. But he knew they were putting lots of people in the seats and they were hollering and screaming. And he said,
Let me preface with this. When he asked what kind of music we play?
Yeah.
Well, that got started because Bill that day didn't happen to have a banjo player, and Courtney Johnson was standing there, and little did Bill know that Courtney was the one banjo player that absolutely couldn't care less if you ever played with Bill Monroe. he loved Bill Monroe, but wasn't impressed, and so. Kenny Baker he put Bill on the spot and he said, "Bill, let's get Courtney to play with us. He's a good banjo man." And Bill said, "No, sir." Mm-mm. He said, "Oh, come on," right in front of the guy. So he's on the spot. Bill's on the spot. "Come on, Bill. We don't have a banjo picker, and Courtney's a good banjo man. Let's get him up." "No, sir, I won't have it." And so Kenny asked the third time, "Oh, come on, Bill." And that's when Bill was trying to get out of what was sort of a squeamish spot for him, because he didn't want that hippie playing banjo with him. And he looked at Courtney and goes, and what do you call your music? Courtney. And Courtney didn't know what to say exactly. He went, "Newgrass?" He said, "Yes, I hate that." That's the real story. I feel like Paul Harvey, and that's the other side.
we ought to do a Monroe tune then, long as we're through a two-song disclaimer about warming up.
Oh,
Sally, so much for that disclaimer. Some of us don't take as long to warm up as others, obviously. I'd like to ask you, how old were you when you started playing mandolin?
It's a wonderful story. I actually started playing electric guitar first. My grandpa was an old-time Mississippi fiddle player, real scratchy kind of fiddle player. But he was fun to play with. But my life, the first two records that I owned in my life was a Flatten Scruggs and a Johnny Cash record. And that worked out pretty good because the only two jobs I ever had in my life was Lester Flatten and Johnny Cash. But one day, there was a salvage store on the edge of Philadelphia, Mississippi. And one day, for 75 cents, I made probably the greatest investment of my life. I bought an old scratchy 78 of Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Quartet. And it was the Wicked Path to Sing. And it just really turned my life around. I wanted to play the mandolin. And there was a hardware store in Philadelphia. I think I've told you. There was a hardware store in Philadelphia where there was an electric mandolin that was on the wall. And I used to go up there after school every day and just try to learn to play something on it. And I went up there one day and it was gone. And I found out this guy named Joe Crenshaw, who worked with my dad at the factory, had bought the mandolin. But he was kind of a simple country guy. And he went home and he didn't have an amplifier. But he had a cord and he didn't quite know what to do. So he tried to plug it into the TV and it didn't work. So he cut the end of it off and rolled it up and stuck it in the wall. And when he hit it, it knocked him across the room.
Electric.
And the doorbell rang at our house one day and he came to the door and he looked about like I did right now. He said, "Boy, where's your daddy?" He had this mandolin in his hand, and he told my dad, he said, "John, you got to buy this thing because it almost killed me." And that's how I got my first mandolin. A Kent, made in upstate New York. Sullivan Family Gospel Singers when I was 12, and discovered Applause and Late Nights and what musicians, you know, love get in the world for. And so we got to play bluegrass festivals, Pentecostal churches, and George Wallace campaign rallies. That's all. And my life was over. And so I met Roland on the circuit. He invited me to come to Nashville, which I did, and Lester gave me a shot. That's about the time I met Executive Sam Bush. 13. Like joining the Navy.
Light explains everything. If yours was the first Flat and Scruggs and Johnny Cash records, that explains how my first record was Bill Cosby. The whole playing style explains. I went on to Lenny Bruce after that. One of the things, I mean, people, when you think of bluegrass, a lot of people think of the fast notes and the fast tunes and the fiddle tunes about things. But at one point, Bill Monroe was doing what we call the stomp. And a great example of, to me, the way you play blues on the mandolin, because Bill is not only, you know, wrote the book on bluegrass, but for me, his blues he played is my favorite blues, you know, played on the mandolin.
And I love blues mandolin very much. I mean, from Mississippi, especially the blues. But I love what Towns Van Zandt said one time. He said, "There's only two kinds of music. There's the blues and everything else is zippity-doo-dah." And the greatest music does have the blues, doesn't it?
Most of it, yeah, for sure. Yeah. B.B. King said there's all kinds of blues. Happy blues, sad blues. There's the blues where you brag about you're the baddest man on the world. Ask Muddy Waters, he had some of those. And, but this one more your stomp, I mean. Thank you.
No smoke required. It speaks for itself. I think right there is one of the greatest mandolin players and one of the ambassadors of mandolin. So much respect.
Can we turn down the bass a little?
Yeah, turn down the bass.
Why is it you always hear the bass? Sir? Well, I think we could both answer that question, but for me, I've never tried to stretch a boundary. I've just tried to stretch myself. In other words, if I'm searching for a new sound, there's only one way to find it, and that's to just keep honing on it and thinking about what you want to do. But, I mean, really, we're from the South, and I know that we just do it because it feels good.
That's the truth.
Some other parts of the country, you got to figure out why. We don't worry about why.
We don't know any better. Yeah. Thank God.
It just feels this way. Because, I mean, yep, you've stretched it too, so what would your answer to that be?
Well, it's a wonderful thing to know where it's the old saying about, it's a wonderful thing to know where you come from so you can at least know where you're going. I love the fact that I have roots, and especially in Mississippi and Sam's Kentucky roots. We both come from very deeply rooted musical heritages. And I appreciate knowing that my roots are there to touch down on from time to time. But sometimes when I get really bored with myself and I feel like I'm just a parody of what I've always done, it's wonderful to go out into the unknown and see what really happens. But I find that you have to get very honest. I have to get honest with myself about who and what I am as a person, spiritually, emotionally, physically, the whole bit. And new music usually appears on top of that, you know. Sometimes it ain't worth playing, but it's fun. But it's a good exercise. But thank God, you know, for Miles Davis and Chevy Wise and Bill Monroe and Louis Armstrong. Those people give me courage to go on and try something different. John Duffy, you bet.
But I mean, and one thing you might think about is if you're, as you learn instruments, whatever instrument, but today we're talking about mandolins, is that I found that sometimes when I get stuck, I go back and listen to the music that first turned me on about playing. And I probably discovered that just when I thought I had it just like Bill Monroe, I didn't. And I go back to the original source and I learn more at that point. So really, you can talk about bluegrass or new acoustic music, but you have to know how to play bluegrass first in order to do that.
It's true.
But I think it is.
Another thing that I'm constantly reminded of is the power of this instrument. This instrument contains so much power. I was at a stadium the other night in Nashville, and there was 50-something thousand people, and there was a lot of loud music that went on all night, and a guy stepped forward to the edge of the stage with a mandolin and did the right thing. You could hear a pin drop in the stadium because of the power of what came out of there. The mandolin is a wonderful instrument. It's a wonderful place.
It is the instrument of the new millennium.
And the old one, too.
Well, yeah, there's that one. Yeah, who did make that mandolin, Mario?
This is a $650 copy of course, the Gibson that a fellow named Chris Warner, who's a great bluegrass banjo player, played. And I had a Lloyd Lore, and I loved it very much, but it couldn't do for me what this one did, so I sold the Lloyd Lore and went back to my $650 axe.
It's a great mandolin.
And as you can see, I take really good care of it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Is that the same one you've always played?
The one, yeah. Wow. This one came, this is a 1937 Gibson F5, but it was
reworked by when it belonged to Norman Blake before I had it. And if you ever see Norman playing an instrument you like, stick around, he'll sell it to you. He just likes different stuff over the years. And this was the mandolin used when John Hartford and Norman Blake recorded the Morning Bugle album. So this one, Hartford played with finger picks. He did those kind of things. But it was going to be, it didn't sound that great, really, as a new instrument. I knew the mandolin before Norman had it, and he had Randy Wood shave the tone bars, the braces. And then the story goes that he and Hartford, in a certain kind of mood one night, they took the finish off this mandolin. They decided they hated the finish, and so they made an audio tape of it. Of course, John had a great, he was a radio announcer at one point, so.
Play-by-play.
Hartford did a play-by-play, take the finish off. Now we're going down around the treble F hole, let's go. So, and then Randy Wood put Cornish finish on this one. So this, probably whoever made this one was, the Gibson factory was still hung over that day because, it's the sloppiest made Gibson ever. And it just so happens that, case in point, what suits you, that's the man when you need to play.
That's right.
Doesn't matter who made it or how much it costs. If that's the one that suits you, then that's the one you need to play. I hope you're talking about the man with this. Later, man, later. Yeah, I know I did. Oh, let's
I want to play the Doc Watson blues.
Yeah. Great. You remember that one back? Is that the one in E?
I don't know.
Thank you.
Marty and I both used to have the opportunity to go around with Doc and Merle, not together, but at the same time, being the fourth wheel. It was Doc and Merle and T. Michael Coleman. And Marty did it some, I did it some, and when you sit and play with next to Doc Watson, you better be in time, because he is. Well, we got to have a couple more questions here, if you have any. We'll play another tune. Yes, sir, in the back.
Good question, man.
I thought you'd say that. Well, I should clarify that statement just to let you know, I guess, in the way I was noting the two of them. In other words, there's things you can do on a fiddle, such as, and I can do them if I'm sitting here by myself without playing the other instruments, but sometimes they're just simply inaudible. In other words, if you go... Well, that's kind of fiddle kind of stuff. So it's really more of the left hand that I speak of, that I was noting it, maybe trying to note the mandolin too much like a fiddle. And then I realized, why don't I just play like Bill Monroe and see how that works? And that worked a lot better. So it was really more noting it, but good point. You don't bow a mandolin, do you? Unless you're in Led Zeppelin.
Worked out okay for them.
Yeah, they did. They did pretty good.
I found a letter the other day. I needed a job so bad when Johnny Cash offered me a job back in the early 80s. He said, "Do you play the fiddle?" I went, "Oh, yeah." "Sure I do." And so he used to do Orange Blossom Special with the harmonicas, you know? And so I borrowed somebody's electric fiddle, which was good by itself. And you will see a magic trick. I can clear this room with one fiddle. But my fiddle playing was so bad, but he never said a word after the first couple of shows, but he wrote me a check at the end of the tour, and he put a letter with it. "Dear son, glad to have you on the show, blah, 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 blah." And wrote, "Love, JR." And he put, "P.S. Do all fiddle squeaker just yours?"
I bet you still have the letter.
I do.
Well, we'll do one more for you, and we want to be sure and watch for Marty and the Fabulous to play with us tonight.
And we, of course, sure to watch the Sam Bush Orchestra.
And, Mary Dowd just loves it here at Grey Fox if we can get the entire audience with their big lighters while I play. Always a good thing to do at a festival when it's really dry.
And there is a tent for finger burn right up here.
Hey, man, let's...
Awesome.
It's a disease. Yeah. Anytime you sit with a mandolin for more than an hour, you got to do a Grisman imitation. I can do that because we recorded an album together. Okay, if there's no request, we'll go on here. What do you want to do? Some people call this tune Ralph's Banjo Special. And I always did just because that's the way it was labeled on the first recording I had of it. It was on like a Stardate compilation by the Stanley Brothers. I now realize it was probably a publishing thing, huh?
Probably.
Yeah, because it's a mandolin tune. So some call it Daybreak and Dixie, some call it Ralph's Banjo Special.
Today it's Sam and Marty's Special, 2-for-1. Amazing.
Yeah, because you won't believe this, but we're composing this on the spot. I told you wouldn't believe it. guess she only wants to dance to Marty, please.
I filled up on a cooler beer and then we went to seats. Half hour.